a public service announcement.
Welcome back to Portrait of an Editor. I am Francis Lombard. Here's a bonus interview regarding Fair Squares Comics' new Kickstarter project, Mutiny Black Girl Magic. I spoke with one of Mutiny's editors, Amanda Meadows, regarding her role in the project. A heads up, this one contains a few F-bombs. Thank you for listening, and please look forward to many more interviews in 2024. Enjoy. Amanda, welcome to Portrait of an Editor. Up front, I'm going to have you come back because right now we want to focus really on Mutiny Black Girl Magic, and then we can have you come back and as the season gets going and people start listening again, talk about your career and really, you know, get into sort of, I haven't had a new editor on the show in a long time, so I'd like to have you, you know, a new person. It seems at times it gets a little incestuous, I think, coming, bringing people back and talking about it, and how many people really want to listen to Will Dennis and I talk about John Byrne. But whatever. Here we are today to talk about Mutiny Black Girl Magic. How are you doing first? Let's get that out of the way.
Hey, Francis. Thank you for having me. And yes, I'm happy to be here starting off a new season or chunk of episodes and also breaking up the incestuousness. I don't know that I would call it that, but it is always nice when a new person finally shows up to the party. Yes. So I'm happy to be here.
It's very nice to meet you. Let's get this out of the way. I reached out to Fabrice Sapolsky of Fair Square because he's got a new Kickstarter. And instead of having Fabrice come back on, which is always a lot of fun, I wanted to talk to you because he brought you joined the project from what I've been reading up. You sort of met Fabrice and then here you are co-editing with him. So what's going on with the Kickstarter? Is there a deadline for the Kickstarter? And can also from that, can you tell us a little bit about the project and what this is all about?
Absolutely. Yeah. First, Francis, thank you again for reminding me of Fabrice. This is a person who I feel like I had always wanted to run into, and it felt like inevitable that we would run into each other because we both had done French comics and we both worked with a lot of similar people. And when I was at Lion Forge Comics, my then editor in chief, Andrea Colvin, was like, "You should meet Fabrice," and it just never happened. And then I ran into Fabrice and Crystal at the Fair Square table at LA Comic Con last winter in December. And I mean, once I walked up to the table, I was like, "Oh my God, Fair Square's here!" I had done no preparation. It's my local show. I just kind of took the bus over with my husband, and we walked around, and we ended up spending like 45 minutes at their table, kibitzing and just commiserating, celebrating just the full range of emotions about what they've done so far and what they're working on. And they told me about Mutiny. And I was like, "Wait a minute, you're actually taking this character from the magazine that I remember and have the first issue of, and you're going to like enfleshen her, like really like give her her own series." And that was really exciting to me. And I was like, "Well, I have to hear more." And it all happened pretty quickly after that. About like a week later, we had gotten breakfast. Speaking of the UCB area, we were at the like former Cafe 101, which has a lot of good memories. Lots of good creative conversations have happened there. So that was a good omen. And from there, we like, you know, we talked about the freelance specifics of, you know, how I will kind of come in and co-edit. Fabrice had already kind of been there from the beginning doing the foundational stuff with Crystal and giving Crystal the support she needed to sort of get through the scripting and casting an artist and all of that. And once Asia was already on board, I kind of joined around the same time. And it was around January that I really started touching materials, and the script is so fun. I really enjoyed working with Asia Fulmer for the first time on the pencils and ink so far. But Mutiny is, I feel like I'm not the best person to describe it, but Mutiny is a representative of a type of story and a type of character that we are not getting in comics. And it's the lived in, realistic, fully dimensional Black femme with conflict, in a way that's inner and outer, that's about her having fun as much as it is about her fighting whatever weird forces are coming her way. And so we really get to know this character in a way that's unlike other Black female heroes, especially in the sort of hero superhero canon. There are a lot of ciphers. There are a lot of people who are deified, but not necessarily human. And this is a great example of that. And I'm really happy to be a part of that, just for that reason. But it's also just a really funny sci-fi romp. They're describing it as Star Wars meets The Wiz, which is quite accurate. But it has that contemporary feel. It reads and looks like a contemporary comic. Asia's art style and her colors are you know, elevating this kind of sci-fi fusion story into something that feels almost more Jose, that almost feels more like a young and engaged idea of superhero, as opposed to sort of like playing with the staid tropes. We're doing a lot of interesting stuff with Mutiny, and I'm not even the one who knows the half of it, which is hilarious. But I'm about to start working on issue 2, and we have a character with a lot of power all of a sudden, like with a lot of superheroes. But this is a very different situation. It's intergalactic, and it's like personal, because the main character is someone who deals in relationships. She's a matchmaker. I think that also has been like a really fun way in to sort of talking about modern life as a Black woman, before we even get into the supernatural element. But yeah, that's my initial ramble. I don't know how helpful that is.
Well, one thing you really bring up, I guess, is because as I've taken time off from the podcast and this hasn't really come out, is that I'm sort of done with superheroes, which is amazing for me to say that, because I've been reading them ever since I could read. I've been fascinated with them. And, you know, like when the movies came out, and then I started realizing, you know, I never collected every comic book superhero. I don't have to see every comic book movie. And it was the beginning of the, I guess, superhero fatigue for me. But it's more reading the stories of being just an old man right now. And I'm like, I want something, I need something more. So and when I saw this Kickstarter come up, I'm like, I mean, I do at time, you know, Fabrice's stuff, I mean, Fair Square's stuff usually gets some of my cash, but I was thinking of maybe like, it's a superhero. I'm like, oh, I really need to really look into this. What is it about that you feel is really different? I mean, that when you're looking at this genre where out in the world, and me personally, it's a little tired. So is there something, the hook, for lack of a better term, that you feel is a new, or the new angle that you're coming at that really makes this character work in the genre that you're working in?
You know, I think it's because of the conditions in which this character is living are so realistic to right now. It's very 2024. You know, we've got the sort of the themes of who we are on social media versus who we are on the street, for Mutiny. We have the I've got my shit figured out, but everything is falling apart around me. How do I engage with the world when that happens? How do I, now that I'm at a place where I feel confident and free and somewhat secure in life, and I discover suddenly that there's all of these problems that I wasn't aware of before. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody in the last 5 years, but I think the very real confrontation that Mutiny is faced with, it hits different for the reader because it feels so much like what we're going through now. We're constantly trying to celebrate our little tiny W's And then we turn the corner and there's a massacre. There's a layoff. There's a natural disaster. There are things that may not necessarily, we don't necessarily think they affect us, but they do. Our role in those things is important. And so much of what Mutiny's journey is in this first leg of the series is reckoning with her responsibility, not just as an individual who's really good at what she does, but what those relationships really mean in the real world and how our power is being used. We could be using our power in a way that feels successful, but when we go home at night, we're not seeing the real horrors that are the result of our choices. And I think the interdimensional conflict in Mutiny is sort of a good metaphor for that. The choice to enter the situation to help others, the choice to put yourself to the side just a little bit for a purpose that's going to be a collective benefit. And without spoiling much, I'd say like that is the juice that this whole project is swimming in. And you can really feel it when you read the first issue and you really get, especially as a Black woman in media, and it's about a Black woman who is in a media type world, it all of the tropes, all of the sort of day-to-day feels really familiar. And then the departures really take you into a space that is a fantastical sci-fi heighten on the very real conflicts that we're faced with on a daily, weekly basis right now. So I would say that, you know, from a broader sense, that's the kind of relevant and cultural competency that superhero comics don't have for me. I don't see it very often. And when it happens, it's because somebody really special came and did a special version of something and really infused it with their perspective. You know, you have to get like an e-viewing type person to come in and bring a new idea. And even then, you're bringing it to something that's already existed and is controlled by a corporate entity that can change how that goes at any point. Whether we're talking about like a multiverse where things can change at any minute, or just the corporate concerns of licensing and the character can't do XYZ because we need her to do ABC next year in this other franchise. And that's something that also, it's like a shadow force that messes with our superhero stories. And with an independent superhero story, I think a lot of independent creators try to copy the trappings of the mainstream superhero story without any of those forces or business necessities. Like, you don't have the like economic reasons to make the same decisions that Marvel's making. So why are you, you know? And that's one of the things I really love about Fair Square's attempt at a superhero series is it's grounded in an experience of modern Black femininity that is legible to us. And it doesn't have to be legible to anyone else for us to get it. But it's also written and drawn in such a way that it's inviting and easy to grok from any perspective. You can see yourself in Mutiny in a lot of different ways, but people like Crystal, people like myself, when we run into a character like Mutiny, it's an experience that we've been waiting for. The experience that people maybe got when they read like that great Hawkeye run 10 years ago or something, you know, the kinds of stuff that like I see people like get heart eyes and teary eyed about character runs in superhero stories that just have no effect on me. But Mutiny doesn't have that same problem for me because it's rooted in experience and identity.
Is there a sense of for the whole team that you're no longer like when it comes to corporate comic books that you're or anything or even that you're not you don't have to ask permission for anything?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I was when I was getting ready for this. It felt like there's no need to ask for permission because it is a Kickstarter because of fair square sort of attitude, you know, overall umbrella of just like, you know, and knowing, having the chance to get to know Fabrice and Crystal Adams. It's just their take on publishing that we don't have to ask permission to do this. And we, there's a sense of, is that, I don't know if you want to explain a little more.
Absolutely. Oh, it's the kind of FU that only like an industry veteran can give. Right. Cause like, you know what spinning the block looks like. So why spin the block with other publishers when you already know what they're all going to say? Yeah. and I've been in a similar position. So like when we linked up, it was a lot of just like us constantly high-fiving each other. Like, yeah, fuck everybody else. It doesn't matter what people's expectations are, because this isn't set in anything that requires those types of expectations to be placed on it. It's not competing for space within a crowded, like, we're not trying to make another spider guy, you know, we're not trying to make like another, you know, name X bestseller. It's the First Mutiny. And, that's the energy you have to come with these things with. And Fair Square's, complete lack of apologism and the rule of not asking for permission is really apparent whenever I work with Fabrice. He's so excited, he's so motivated, and you know, when we have creative conversations, it's very much rooted in the situation, in the story, in the character, in what we're trying to accomplish, not external goals or other eyeballs that we're worried about, which has been the case with me and other publishers in the past, where it's like, well, who so-and-so gonna think? What's this distributor gonna think? Is the director of marketing gonna like this? And it's just, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. Because like, we know what's possible, but, if we are forced to work with people whose imaginations are constrained by their fear, and bias, then, you know, we're just going to be stuck with them. We don't want that. We're done with working with them. We've all been in that situation before. We've all worked in lots of different places where people would say no to very obviously good ideas.
Do you feel that, I mean, when I was working at Humanoids, I was introduced that comics, you know, Metal Hurlant started out as sort of a punk attitude. A coworker said, you know, there's punk in comics. And I'm wondering, Fabrice seems to have that attitude towards, and there was something you said too, that you feel that there is sort of a, what kind of, where's the attitude? Is there somebody that could relate to in Mutiny? Is there, I guess, another medium that might, you know, somebody who's coming in, you know, brand new, might be able to relate to, sort of, does that, am I making sense?
Yeah, you are. You know what? I would say it's kind of like, the first thing that came to mind is Abbott Elementary, which is a great sitcom that has reached a mainstream success that people did not see for it. But those characters, there's so many different kinds of personalities that go into those workplace comedies. And while Mutiny isn't a workplace comedy, I'd say that the character Ava in Abbott Elementary, not so much the lackadaisicalness, not necessarily the shirking of responsibility, but the effortless charisma, the ability to turn everything into a party, the ability to turn everything into a look, that sort of alchemy, that's something that Mutiny really has. She has that sort of effervescent personality. She is the kind of person who can convince an extremely shy, introverted person to say hi to the person that they've always wanted to say hi to, and make them feel good about doing that. The first person that came to mind was Ava in Abbott Elementary, in terms of like the sort of the happiness and the also the sort of, I'm a little bit into myself. I'm a little bit interested in what I'm doing, I'm going to go live. I'm going to tell everybody what I'm doing. And then every so often when the phone is, when the phone screen turns off, she learns something, right? And, that's, I feel that's kind of how we meet Mutiny in issue one. And it's a very sort of accessible and relatable person. I've definitely been Mutiny at times.
How long have you been editing comics?
Yeah, I've been editing comics for almost 15 years now. Okay. So yeah.
Did you have to change your approach to things at anything because you're jumping, right, you know, sort of jumping into the middle of this? Was there sort of did you learn anything new? As an editor, you're supposed to, you know, be able to, I guess one thing I've learned is adjust to whatever the situation and adjust the personalities and be able to still, you know, bring your skills and be, but what was your experience of coming into this? And did you change your approach at times?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I definitely had that concern. I always have that concern, going into a new project. And, because of the way, we sort of quote unquote onboarded, me, Crystal, and Fabrice, it was very clear that we were on the same page. And, as someone coming in after a lot of foundational materials were set up, there's a little bit of a freedom in there for me because normally I'm a little bit of like a holistic foundational kind of person when it comes to editing. So I really do like to be there from the beginning, but this wasn't a situation where that was necessary. You know, like this was a character that they had been living with for a while, that people wanted to see more of, and they had laid the groundwork. Fabrice knew that he didn't have the bandwidth to really devote his time to the series. And he knew, in addition to that, that he wasn't the right person to do that. If he was choosing, it would be someone who really understood the material in a way that is more close to the author. And so, you know, because you have like a great like publishing duo, they trust each other. And so coming in, it's a lot easier to come into a working publishing relationship where people already trust each other and are very clear on their intent and purpose. So coming in, I really just had to give myself time to read everything that had been done so far and just kind of orient myself and think about, well, this is how they're doing it. This is how they want to approach this. And then what's missing? Is there anything that I can suggest? So far, that's really been little foundational things in sort of getting the story set up for long-term success. And so when I started the issue one, script had already been written, but I was able to give some notes on it. And then into the art, it was, you know, very much me and Fabrice. And that was something that I learned to get used to, was just the knowing exactly where to stop with the notes. And it was really great the way we did it, because he would start and he would kind of give me his notes, and then I would do a pass and we would talk about our notes together. And inevitably I would kind of winnow it down and smooth it out and get that to the creators. And that's been a really organic process, surprisingly. Normally there are, you know, usually when I'm co-editing, there's an institution involved and I'm either full time somewhere or freelancing, usually free time. That portmanteau that doesn't exist for me. I'm usually at a full time job, and those are more complicated because usually there's like a lot of dumb restrictions around the project. Like, okay, this is a reprint and we have to change XYZ, or this is a project where the original editor has disappeared because they were laid off or fired, and the creator needs like someone who will come in and really like take over the project, but that never happens, right? And so sometimes you end up kind of co-editing with an absent editor, you know, where you're sort of taking what's been done and what notes have been given and try to give notes that continue along that path as opposed to overwriting it and rewriting it. So luckily, that kind of stuff didn't happen here. It felt like I was just at the right time. You know, if we had already been at issue two, maybe it would be a little harder for me to make sure that issues one and two bleed into each other the right way. But you know, I big shout out to Fabrice again for bringing me in at just the right time.
Did it help that you were a fan of what Fair Square was doing?
That you, absolutely.
You know, how did you feel about going from fan to, I guess, coworker?
Yeah, co-editor, you know. Yeah, it's funny. Like it's happened enough times for me that I definitely have like the good examples and the bad examples. But this was a situation where I was a fan of their work, but in a way that I felt like was maybe a little bit, it was on more than one dimension. It was like, I love the work that they are putting out, but I also love the choices that they were making internally. As someone who worked on licensed French comics and did translation and localization type of turnover on books, I've seen the ways that that it can be really difficult to like make your stamp, to make effective changes on things that are like already done. And the way that they approach that is excellent. I was already, they already had my heart when I saw that they had licensed two books that I really wanted Lionforge to do back when I was still there. And so, you know, it just, those little signifiers are so important. They show me that these are people with the same intent, with the same purpose, with they're not here for clout. They're not here for a quick buck. You know, they're here to make meaningful, lasting change. And so I was a fan of that mission. And I think that is like it's a little extra to just me liking the books. If I had just liked the books and knew nothing about who they were, the decisions they've made, I feel like I would have had a lot more to learn. But I think because Fabrice and I and Crystal and I have had so many similar life experiences in comedy and publishing and comics across the board, there was just a common language there that made it even easier for me to sort of integrate into their process. Because there are lots of freelance projects that I do where I really do have to kind of step back and go, okay, you guys need to kind of show me where my place is here. You know, there's a lot of moving parts. But here it's we're starting with just Mutiny, and I do hope to work with them again on other projects down the line. But just working on Mutiny to start has been a delight.
You've mentioned a couple times in that with the character Mutiny also having an influence on the world and showing, being, you know, wondering if she can take her success, have her success, or she has her life together, and how can I, you know, help out when the stuff goes bad. And also you just mentioned with Fabrice and you know, just in Crystal thinking about trying to change things. Mm-hmm. What exactly do you feel that things can change? Because in some of the conversations that we're recording, people are like the doom and gloom about the publishing. I guess, can you be a little more specific? Are you seeing them as their approach to publishing, or is it much bigger beyond that and taking the medium of comics to sort of influencing and getting a message out to the world that hopefully might, you know, that might make people see things differently?
Sure.
I'm being clear in this question.
Yeah. Just
sort of running theme and of mentions of that, of, and I guess maybe personally, I feel sometimes I wonder, can one person really make a difference? And that's a lot of superhero comments.
Yeah, exactly. And the can one person make a difference thing. to bring my worldview and personal politics into this. It's really that's not possible. Individualism isn't the way, and individualism is what got us to these horrors. And I think one of the themes that will sort of bloom throughout Mutiny is the ways that Mutiny learns to tie her fate to others, even when she feels like they have nothing in common. And sometimes she's forced with that reality when it turns out, the laser that was pointing at this person, they're murked, and now it's her next, you know? And those are like tropes that happen in fights and in like superhero action sequences, but they're rarely tied to a very real emotional problem. And Black women like Mutiny, like me, are constantly faced with the reality of the gaps. Like, we have They Live goggles on, and we can see where the gaps are in society because we've been in them. We've fallen in them, and people said, I don't see that gap. And when you see people at their worst, making their worst decisions and owning them and celebrating them and building societies on them, you know, and we have to navigate that, that's not something I'm excited about. And it's one of the reasons why superhero comics a lot of times don't do it for me, like you were saying, Francis, is like, it's because it's a lot of those same post-war tropes. And Mutiny isn't really playing by those rules. So we get something very different and more relevant to now, because we're not kind of asking the same sort of trite, like, can one person make a difference? Can one voice be loud enough? That's the wrong question. The question is, can you turn to your neighbor and tell them the problem so that they are on the same page, and then we can shout together? That's part of the themage that I think people will appreciate from Mutiny in the long term. But taking it back to Fair Square, those are very real decisions that they have to make. Their slogan is Comics from the Rest of Us for a reason. These are the books that get denied. As an editor who has been in a lot of acquisitions situations where great things have come through, but the people who are in the room, you know, not all of them, but it's always just enough. And sometimes it only takes one person who's senior enough and thick enough and that committed to misunderstanding that, you know, everyone just gets uncomfortable and wants to drop it. People don't want to fight for the obviously good decision if it means they have to sit with and deal with the snotty, shitty people in their organization who are going to do everything they can to stop it, slow it down, make it harder, just straight up not support it. You know, Fabrice has gone through that, and I've gone through that.
I've gone through that.
Yeah, you know, and on the other side of that token, I've also had to be the only person in an editorial board who says this pitch that's come in here is not appropriate, and we should not be considering this seriously for these very real reasons. And having to present the problem, which is inherent in the material, but me pointing it out makes me the problem. And so I'm used to being the problem in every room, to be the person who points out what's wrong and says, this is how we have to fix it. And everyone's like, oh man, we got to get up off of our comfy chairs and put down our nice drinks. That's the energy in publishing anytime you want to do anything that isn't templated, like that doesn't already have like a roadmap. That marketing doesn't already know what five same websites they're going to talk to. With Fair Square, the clear-eyed realization of all of those things is just embedded in how they work because they've been through it. They've done They've gone through the no's. They've gone through the fake yeses that turn into no's once things get done enough and it's time to treat it like it's real. And so the diversity and inclusion and belonging element that was just so fun to talk about for 2.5 years and never done anything about. And now all of those resources have gone away. In that environment, Fair Square is all the more important because they're going directly to readers. I think that's the key difference in a situation like publishing where there's only like 3.5 companies. And they have all the power and the means of distribution and production in a lot of ways. And you can't compete with them, but what you can do is what they're not doing. And what they're not doing is going directly to readers in a way that's meaningful. They stopped that. And even the few ways that they were doing that kind of well, like with BookCon, that's gone. The pandemic kind of ate away at a lot of those efforts at like real readership. And Book Talk is something that's going to come and go, that's going to have seasons. And it's predominantly white to begin with. So we're in a landscape right now that's so anti-Black, that's so anti-woman, that's so anti-questions, that a series like Mutiny comes from them going around the country for a couple of years and showing people in every town their books and people pointing at Mutiny on the sign and going, but what's her story? And that being a consistent like thing in all of their convention experiences at Fair Square is saying something. And that's the kind of information, that's the kind of secret sauce that you don't get from a cubicle in Penguin Random House. I think that's the real difference. When you know what's at stake and you're motivated by that and making a good product that's made with people who are proud of not just the product, but the process, those are really important factors that are just not... they're not weighted very heavily in institutions, but when you're working in a small outfit like Fair Square, it's all the more important that things go right. And the margin of error is very slim. And so the energy, the motivation, the excitement to get this out like is very real. And it's also very necessary because if it doesn't come from them, it won't come from anywhere.
So, Amanda, I think you've convinced me to rethink my take when it comes to superheroes, especially when it comes to Mutiny, Black Girl Magic. I gotta think about something, especially, so this book sounds really interesting. Of course, everything that Fair Square does sounds really interesting. So let me just get it right. The Kickstarter campaign goes up to the 26th of March.
That's right. We got 12 days left.
Okay.
And on Tuesday, the 26th at 6 a.m., we are done. At the moment, we are like a little over 2/3 toward the goal. Mm-hmm. We're sort of sitting around that like 6K. And the goal is 9. So I fully think, you know, just with Kickstarter math and the way Kickstarter timing always goes, it's like you get that big hump at the beginning and then you just kind of hover for you just kind of float for most of a month
and sweat a lot
and yeah exactly worry. And then in the last 3 days everyone's like, oh shit, it really is time to back this before it's gone. And yes, exactly. And that's the real drill, so thank you for being a part of that.
You're welcome. I also know, yeah, it has to be fully funded. That's, you know, I don't think Fabrice is like, oh, let's just go ahead. No, it really depends. No, a lot of the projects seem to be like it's either fully funded or it doesn't happen. So hopefully my listeners would like to see this happen. So who's the crew? I mean, the creative crew on the book. Let's just run, Can you run through them?
This all comes from the brain and heart of the series is Crystal Adams. This is her baby. This is also a character and a story that represents like a lot of what she has always wanted to read in comics. And with her background as a comedian and writer, and writing her first comic, it was really important to her to get it right. Not in like a sort of traditional comic sense, getting it right, but getting it right in terms of what was in her head. And Fabrice being a publisher partner, to her really, I think, set her up for success. And then bringing in Asia Fulmore, who is just has the most gorgeous line work, and has such a unique approach to action sequences in a way that feels more like manga, more like the kinds of comics that Crystal and I read already, and not trying to fit a mold, not trying to fit a type of fighting style or cinematic type of panel layout that, you know, a big two would do. And so that, you know, sort of from the ground up, unique approach fully tailored to this new character who is fully informed by a person with a lot of experience and a great perspective honed by years of being a funny ass comedian. So we had just kind of like a perfect storm, and me meeting them, I feel super lucky. I feel like the unicorn third in the threesome. It's just very like, it's unreal to get to work with a team that has been through so much of what you've been through. So a lot of things don't need to be explained, and we could just get right to the good stuff and get into the notes and get into the like methodology and get into like, you know, because Fabrice is an artist himself, you know, we get to have really interesting conversations about layout that are very dynamic and rooted in how things are going to look and how the visual pacing drives the story. So like, and then me kind of coming in and really being a protector of Mutiny, her story, the characters, and making sure that we are doing justice to the themes and the characters in the story. That's been really easy when everybody cares just as much as you do, if not more. So it's just been incredible. And they brought on Tara, who has been really great from Twin Sirens, a really awesome new company that's doing social media and publicity services. They've been a great help with getting the word out during the Kickstarter. And we're, you know, together, it just feels like a really ragtag but baller team. We're ragtag in that we gotta ask for you to pre-order it, you know. But other than that, we know what the fuck we're doing, and we're having a great time.
It definitely sounds like it. Awesome. So, well, it's great meeting you. And after the campaign ends, we'll have to have you come back and talk about so much more editing and stuff. So if you would like
absolutely
to come back,
I'd love to.
I'll have you. I guess you could be my first new editor for the year, for the new season.
Ooh, I love it. All right.
So I will be in touch, and thank you very much for coming on and talking about Mutiny. And I'm looking forward to it. So I will talk to you again.
Okay. Appreciate you, Francis. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Take care.
Take care. Bye.